This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And here we go. Welcome into Wake Up Call right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson filling in for Tony D alongside the run and only Ron Culver. Ron, it has been a fantastic morning, hasn't it?
So far, so good.
I just say, did you enjoy the nice cool weather this morning or no?
I do. I do like it a little more on the chillier side compared to what we normally get during the summer because I hate it.
Honestly, if you were to give me this for 1 month, I would not complain whatsoever about the ones that come like it. Like in July, I wouldn't. Like this for 1 month, oh yeah, I could deal with that. Because you have all these people who are always like, oh, you can't deal with the cold, but you know, anything below 60 degrees. Sweetie, anything above 80 degrees for you up north is like freaking hell. So I don't want to hear it about how we have to live in 110. I can get used to this easily. But you want to know what I can't get used to? Once again, seeing LeBron James be a captain in the All-Star game. It's already been official. We already knew he was going to be because that's what happens with popularity votes. LeBron James and Kevin Durant will once again be the captains of the two teams in the All-Star game, as the NBA announced Thursday night, for the game to be held in February 20th in Cleveland. James going back to making his grand debut where he started, where it all began. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one. James has now made 18 All-Star games, tying Kobe Bryant for second place, just behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and I'm sure he'll break that record next season. Joining James as the starters in the Western Conference is Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry, Memphis Grizzlies guard Jarrod Morant, Nikola Jokic, the reigning MVP for the Denver Nuggets, and forward Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins earning a starting nod. If that is not straight-up actual you voting, I have no idea what is. From the East, 12-time All-Star Kevin Durant will be joined by DeMar DeRozan, Atlanta Hawks guard Trae Young, Philadelphia 76ers Joel Embiid, and Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo in the front court. Though Durant's ability is expected to be a question mark as he continues to recover from a knee sprain ligament. Who missed out, guys? Who was left off the All-Star ballot that should have been brought in? 800-224-2004. I'm going to tell you right now. You're going to tell me right up that Andrew Wiggins is an all-star and a starting all-star? I get it. He's having a career year with 18.1 points and playing over 17 minutes per game. That's not an all-star, people. That is straight-up voting at its finest, where it is a popularity contest. Do not tell me that all-star starters is nothing more than popularity.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Well, we did so well with this yesterday. Cole Thompson filling in for Tony D. Ron Culver was nice enough to go ahead and bring back the staple. The good, the bad, and the dumb.
Yep.
Ronald, what is our good for today?
The good of the day. Put it down on your calendar, kids. 3 p.m. Eastern Time Sunday is must-watch TV, featuring the top two teams in their run to the championship. Of course, I'm talking about Team USA versus Team Canada.
Yeah.
World Cup qualifying for the CONCACAF top spot. Now, neither team will be able to qualify outright for the World Cup after they play each. Well, Canada might be able to, depending on certain other things. But it will be a fun game to see. They will be playing each other in Hamilton. I had to look it up where actually Hamilton, Canada is, and it's just west of Toronto.
Hamilton? Yeah, I would say it's right outside Toronto.
But game time temperature is going to be in the low 20s with a feels like of minus 5.
I love it. You know what? You want to know what I love about this? Honestly, because like here's the thing. When players flop in soccer, like, and they're trying to get that extra time back to where they can extend the clock, you know they're not going to flop because they don't want to lay down in the stuff. The second that they flop, they're in real pain. It's like, oh boy, we got to get them out there.
No. Blast. I mean, here's what you can guarantee. Everyone's going to be wearing long sleeves. Everyone's going to be wearing gloves. And that, I know this from personal experience, that ball is going to feel like a rock.
I say, I feel bad for the goalie. I 100% feel bad for the goalie.
Oh, no, the goalie will be fine.
Oh, don't worry. I know he wears gloves.
It won't hurt as much as him. Where it's going to hurt is when someone takes a shot and someone is blocking it with their leg, with their thigh.
Oh, what's going to hurt?
Something
when,
like that.
Oh, what's going to hurt when they line up for the extra kick and then you have the wall in front?
Yeah.
And you get drilled in the back?
I would purposely just drill it into the wall.
I 100% would drill it into the wall. Last time the Canadians men's national soccer team made the FIFA World Cup 1986.
Yeah.
Have a chance to qualify. That's pretty cool. And this is for the CONCACAF final, right?
No, there's still six games to go, I believe.
In the CONCACAF?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it doesn't – World Cup qualifying is not going to wrap up until probably – I think it's March.
I say it should wrap up either March or April. Like mm-hmm. that should be about the end of where we kind of know who's going to be going and playing
yeah.
in it.
But I mean, then there's a chance. But there is a chance if Canada is to win and win big that they could end up qualifying depending on what other teams do.
Now hold up, was the CONCACAF on last night where USA beat El Salvador? Or
yes.
Because that was
World Cup qualifying.
So that was World Cup. Okay.
Canada beat Honduras.
They beat Honduras, didn't they?
And then USA beat El Salvador. Mexico had a rally to beat Jamaica.
That was it. Jamaica so those, was the other one.
Those are the top three teams that you have there, and the points total 19, 18, 17.
Imagine if you just.
This is a huge game.
It's a very big game because again. Last time that it was 2014, the last time that the men's qualified for the World Cup. And
now I think those three teams are on the right path. I think those will be the representatives for CONCACAF when the World Cup happens later this year in Qatar. But I mean, this is for the top spot, which is what you want.
Oh, you 100% want to be able to control right your group. You want to be able to have that matchup to where you're able to know. Going in,
yeah.
It does have
a tinge of bad because I mean, you know, just 3 p.m. Eastern. This is a horrible time for you guys.
Oh, it's a horrible time for anybody who is a football fan. You're just literally sitting there going, "Hey," and then everyone's going to look at
the other football fan. You should say,
"I say," well, everyone's going to look at the football ratings and be like, "Bro, we got a 3.9."
Yeah.
No,
well,
no,
I mean, it's kind
no,
of funny. Both games are on CBS.
That is pretty cool. So,
but
one's leading into the other.
Well, no, because they're at the same time.
And both games are on CBS?
Yeah, well, the other one, it's a CBS offshoot, Paramount Plus.
Oh. Do you like that they're doing that Paramount Plus stuff?
I don't mind it.
I don't want to pay extra. I mean, that's me personally.
Yeah. We have too many streaming services now.
I mean, let's be frank. Do you still have cable TV?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry.
I do.
I'm so sorry for your bill.
Yeah, it's probably my age where I'm just like, can't get rid of it. But it's funny though because I used to have the sports package. I took the sports package away because I get it through streaming services now, and I'm sitting there like, okay, well, the whole purpose of me having cable, having like a hard cable line in the first place was to have the sport, you know, that get all the different sports channels that they provide. But now I'm getting them through other services. I'm like, why do I still have cable?
That's the worst part. Is like, you know, you can pay to go get it from other services,
yeah.
And then you're still on your cable box.
Still on my cable box looking for it. And like the other night, I wanted to watch the Hall of Fame ceremony, and I was like, oh, let me turn it on the MLB Network and realize that, no, I got rid of that channel because I purchased it elsewhere.
Gotta say, because you purchased it elsewhere.
So I was like, oh, that's right. Let me get the laptop out.
What do we have for the bad?
The bad of the day, you know, we got to – this is a really bad one. We'll keep, you know, us people down in Houston, we're going to keep you guys up in the Northeast in our thoughts this weekend. As you prepare for something that just sounds like just absolutely terrifying. Bomb cyclone.
A what?
A bomb cyclone. That's what they're predicting. And the greatest thing about this, because this we get lost on this with living here in Houston. They're not talking about how many inches of snow they're going to get. They're talking about how many feet of snow they're going
to
get.
Oh, trust me. It's funny. Me and my dad went to Lake Tahoe 2 weeks ago, and we were talking to some of the locals, and we were like, oh, how many inches you got? We got 7 feet. I'm just like,
yeah.
Oh, you actually go by feet here. You don't do that 200 inches. No, we got 12
feet
in 4 days.
Last February, we had freezing cold temperatures, maybe 2 inches of snow, maybe three.
There were parts that got 5 inches at the max.
Yes. And we literally shut the city down.
It was bad. It was.
I mean, yeah, we had the whole power issue, but that's beside the point. Even if you didn't have the power issue, we still had to shut the city down because no one couldn't drive.
You couldn't drive because the roads were too icy and no one knows how to drive on icy roads.
Yeah.
But what was funny was, and here was the part that I always thought was so stupid with it. Do you remember the big pile up on I-35 in Dallas?
Yes.
Okay. At what point did you not sit there and go, maybe we should check in on Houston and other cities at this point?
Start spraying that salt brine.
Maybe we should just get this going now before it's a little too late. What was funny was Jake Asman, who now is on ESPN 97.5, another local affiliate with us, he was on that day, and our boss, Craig, called him and was like, do you know anybody who can come in and actually talk for a couple hours since we can't get the phone lines working? And me and him sat in this studio for 3 hours, and at one point, I could see my breath against the microphone. And I was sitting in the middle of the commercial break. I was like, Jake, speak really loudly. And he starts talking really loud. Okay, let me phrase that. He starts talking normally, and then absolutely, he's like, oh, I just saw my breath. I'm like, dude, it's that bad. We're bundled up. We have three blankets on. And again, Jake's from New York, so he's at least used to it. My dad grew up in Chicago. My mom grew up in New Jersey. I'm used to the snow. I'm not engulfed in the snow culture. But a bomb tornado.
Cyclone.
Bomb cyclone.
So basically what this is, what it means is that there's a storm that's coming, and it's a mixture of one storm coming up the East Coast, one coming across the northern United States. They're going to kind of mix. It is going to create hurricane-like conditions, almost like a Category 2 hurricane. That's how fast the wind speeds are. And it's going to be a blizzard.
It's going to be a blizzard.
In New York City, I mean, they're predicting up to about 20 inches of snow.
I'm more... Okay, the snow doesn't bother me. It's the wind.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'm just walking outside. I don't want to get hit by snow. And then the snowball comes flying at your face at 30 miles an hour.
So as everyone's been saying all week, and we're going to reiterate it here, you know, obviously travel's going to be affected, guys. So just hang tight. Listen to us.
Listen, here's the deal. If you have not already left, it's too late. Bundle up. Find shelter. Get away from the windows. Board up. Hug your dog. Get yourself a nice hot
Keep
cup of
cocoa.
Keep
the fire burning.
Keep the fire burning. Maybe and turn on Netflix.
You know, maybe today... Watch the day after tomorrow.
You know what? Yeah, you should.
And take notes.
Just don't get to make sure that the wolves don't come after you.
Yes.
First. And by the way, make sure that they're not also rabid wolves that like are made in a factory, because like that would be the one thing. Oh God, watch it actually happen. Like watch those wolves that came hunting after them.
I mean, what? Yeah. What if the wall breaks at the Bronx Zoo? Because that's where they came from. And you know now you got wolves loose in New York City.
I don't want a Harambe 2.0.
Who are just hungry.
I don't want a Harambe 2.0. Let's just go with that. I don't think any of us need that again. What is the dumb of the day?
China.
Well, yes, but what is the dumb of the
day? Yeah, China. I'm not going to get all too political, but China doesn't deserve great U.S.-made things.
Okay.
Sounds like an oxymoron, right?
I mean, yes, 100%, if we're just going to go with the way you said it.
China, and they've been doing this for years. This is not new to anybody, but... they changed the ending to Fight Club to a more happier
ending. I saw this.
So you'll watch Fight Club. It'll cut the final scene like a little bit. And then I'm going to try to read it as best I can here. It says, through the clue provided by Tyler, the police. God, the handwriting is so small in here. It's hard to see it. Basically, what they said was, you know, the police did their job. They arrested those who were affected, but everyone got out.
And they said right before the bomb goes off, the police were able to defuse it and get everyone out to safety.
Yeah.
And then roll the credit. Bro, that's not how Fight Club is supposed to end.
No.
That's not how Fight Club is supposed to end whatsoever. And you know what? I think Fight Club is an overrated movie. I really do, and I know I'm going to get a lot of feedback from a lot of
people. No, you know what it is? The movie is really good the first time you watch it.
It's really good the first time.
Because you have no idea what's going on, and then that twist at the end just blows your mind, and you're like, whoa.
Oh, when you're sitting there and you figure out.
Now that you know it, it kind of, like, it loses that luster. It's kind of like The Sixth Sense. I love The Sixth Sense the first time I watched it because of that twist at the end. But now you see it and you're like, okay, well, I mean, the story is good, but I know what's coming.
Okay, so you remember, okay, remember how I was talking about replacing Sean Payton, replacing Nick Saban, how it's going to be an absolute dumpster fire?
Yeah.
I feel like that was like The Sixth Sense. Like, M. Night Shyamalan got the perfect twist of all time. And ever since, like, what are you going to do next? Bro, I gave you it. I gave it. Just see that one? There we go. I can retire off that. Because you're never going to beat that. Same thing when you figure out Tyler. Like, when you figure out the whole story with Tyler, it's like, That is the greatest twist ending of all time. And then you see the bomb go off, and you're watching Edward Norton's face look just so distraught, and it's like, this is the end. This sounds so long. And then cut to black. It's like, what happens? It's like an Inception when you sit there and you're waiting to figure out, did the pendulum fall? Is it there? And then is the totem still running? And it's like, well, the director said that it's still running. Shut up. Don't ruin it for me. And then you go ahead and just go, oh, well, the people were able to get out of the building safe because the bomb was defused by nice police officers. Have a good day. It's like, that's not how Fight Club ends.
It's all right to have unhappy endings.
It's very all right to have unhappy. You want to know what the reality is? Most of life is an unhappy ending.
Like, I will go on record and say this. One of my favorite Star Wars movies was Rogue One.
And I hate Rogue One.
The reasoning why is because it was about midway through the movie, you realized none of these guys, none of these characters that you're falling in love with can make it.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and I love that aspect about it because Star Wars has never been dark. It was a lighter way to be dark through the entire thing, knowing that, God, I fell in love with this person, fell in love with that person, but they all got to die because they weren't in.
They weren't in A New Hope, which is right after. I will say this: the one show that I will always appreciate is Game of Thrones because of what they did was they made you fall in love with these characters just to watch them die. I will never forget this, and we'll close it out with this before we gotta go to commercial break. Did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes.
When Oberyn Martell is talking over the mountain in season 4, I am screaming out of television because I know it's about to happen. I didn't know it was going to happen that way, and I didn't read the books, but I knew it was about to happen. I'm screaming, kill him. He was my favorite character. I did not watch season 5 until a year and a half later because of that episode. Like, I was so done at that point, falling in love with characters, loving the character arc, watching them be built up, and then die. The only good part of that entire story was Tywin getting killed. That was the only good part. And I was like, good, you deserve to die like my dreams with this TV show. The good, the bad, and the dumb right here on Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio Network.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Cole Tossa filling in for Tony D right here on Wake Up Call. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the conference championship this weekend. We can talk a little bit about the other games. I mean, I really think that there's not much to go into with San Francisco-Los Angeles. We will get to it at some point, I promise. But I really do want to focus in on the likes of Kansas City and Cincinnati. When you were told that the start of the season, let's just say I walked up to you, I traveled back in time, I went back at the start of the year, and I went up and said, guys, this is the year. This is the year where the Cincinnati Bengals are not the Cincinnati Bengals. What are they? Well, they're Tigers. They're fierce. Rawr. They go after you. They play good defense. They find ways to make plays across the middle of the field. They do a great job of playing offensively. They have weapons galore, and you see a 6'2" wide receiver from LSU miss all last season, not miss a beat the second he arrives at the professional level. Pairs up with Joe Burrow, who's coming off a torn ACL, and gets a good solid run game despite having an adequate offensive line play. You watch them torch their way through the AFC North, not only torch their way through the division, but get past the likes of the Las Vegas Raiders, surprise everybody with 3 interceptions against Ryan Tannehill, and have a rookie kicker smile with the biggest grin you could ever imagine going up to a quarterback coming off of a near horrific injury saying, well, you know what? Time to send us to the AFC Championship. You want to know what you would say to me? Yeah, the mental hospital down that way, you know, it's right down there. Don't turn left. You go there, you're going to go towards the fun factory. You got to go towards the right. It's gloom and doom. That's what you got to do. That's what you would say. Because that's the reality of when you look at a team like the Cincinnati Bengals. They're an organization that has been known for being frugal at best. They don't spend money. They don't take care of their own. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you a big surprise here. Cincinnati is cold. Cincinnati is not a warm place. And in the winter, it can get brutal. I have a friend. He used to cover Texas A&M. Now he's up there. This is his second year covering the Cincinnati Bengals. You want to know what? He still is not used to the cold. You want to know who else is not used to the cold? Zach Taylor, their head coach, said right before they were playing the Las Vegas Raiders, I'm wearing four layers of clothes right now. The Bengals refuse to build an indoor facility. That's how frugal ownership is. That's how frugal this team is with money. That's how little they want to spend. But you want to know what? It takes one name. It takes one person to change a culture. And I really look at this. I said earlier that we're looking for the next Ben Roethlisberger inside the NFL. I think you found it with Joe Burrow. I really do. Guy was underutilized during his time at Ohio State, you know, from the city of Ohio, just like Big Ben. 6'4" frame, got a chip on his shoulder attitude, just like Big Ben did coming in. Has all the intangibles to make the right throws. Got a great arm, but more specifically, has that attitude, that chip, that little bit of zest to him that, mwah, you need to play quarterback in the NFL, especially in today's league. When Ben Roethlisberger was coming out of Miami of Ohio, he was just a big kid who was able to make deep throws down the field, but he also knew his place. He was probably right in that conversation along with Brady and Manning, but right below them, probably more in that Drew Brees, you could throw Phillip Rivers, maybe Eli Manning in that category. Like, that was what he was known for, that guy, right there. But Joe Burrow doesn't accept that. Joe Burrow wants to be the best. And what's really fun about Joe than anything else is when you listen to him in press conferences, not only is he his authentic self, something that is naturally needed to play quarterback in the NFL today, but he also is a guy who comes into work every single day wanting to learn. That's a trait that I think is only synonymous with those who truly understand what it means to fail. There's always a quarterback out there that gets everything. The reason why Trevor Lawrence probably struggled this year is not just because he was with a bad coaching staff with Urban Meyer. It's because the guy didn't have to fail at anything. The guy didn't have to worry about overcoming adversity. Think about this for a second. Trevor Lawrence went from being a starting quarterback in high school as a sophomore, losing two games his entire career. Never won a Heisman, but was a Heisman finalist twice. Helped his team get to the college football playoff on three occasions. Not only that, won a national title his first year, went to two other college football playoff appearances, had two losses. By the way, the one loss to Notre Dame in 2020, that wasn't him. That was DJ Uiagalelei, and they had to go to overtime against Notre Dame. Gets to the NFL, goes to a roster that is depleted with talent. Not only does he not know how to overcome adversity, not only does he not know how to overcome the standards of what it is to be on a failing team, he gets frustrated. And now the team is starting fresh. And guess what? Now the clock's, you know, ticking. Is he actually Andrew Luck? Is he actually the next John Elway? Joe Burrow was told by Urban Meyer, the same coach that coached up Trevor Lawrence, not good enough. Dwayne Haskins. Yeah, that guy's great. That's who we want on our team. That guy, yeah, he's better than you. He's 1,000% better than you. And so you want to know what? Just like Michael Jordan, I took that personally. Goes down to LSU, has to go ahead and get his ass kicked in the SEC for a year before Joe Brady comes in and the entire staff changes. Team completely revamps its style, gets new weapons, the weapons start blowing up, and now they're on their way to a national championship. Goes into Cincinnati, a team that is so frugal with how they spend their money. A team that doesn't like to go touch anyone in free agency. A team that lets players walk all the time. And not only demands, but also has earned in two short years, the respect to start making calls in the locker room. To start having a say. Goes gets Jamar Chase. Look at the talent. Look at what's transcended. Go get T. Higgins, a physical wide receiver. Tyler Boyd, one of the more slept-on wide receivers in the NFL today. No way he talks about him. And a good run game with Joe Mixon. Joe Mixon, no way wants to talk about him because of the passing attack. Guy was number two in three in rushing this year. Guy was third in rushing, and he was number two in yards per attempt at 5.6. This is a good Bengals team. And it's not just Joe Burrow, and it's not just Jamar Chase. They have playmakers, and defensively they have playmakers. And what's really interesting is ever since Burrow got there last season, the Brown family started spending money. They started to go listen to their quarterback, something that they didn't do with the last number nine who took center. This is what makes good teams good. This is what makes teams resentful. And this is why the Cincinnati Bengals have an opportunity to win on Sunday.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Two hires have been made in the NFL. Who is going to be the next domino to fall? Cole Thompson filling in for Tony D. And as we do all the time, we head out to the Aggressive Hotline and are joined by Aaron Wilson, national NFL writer for Pro Football Network. Aaron, good morning. How are you, my friend?
Doing great. Good morning, Cole. How are you?
I am just dandy. Now, let's go ahead and break down a little bit that we've already known. Nathaniel Hackett hired by the Denver Broncos. We saw just a few minutes later, Matt Eberflus hired by the likes of the Chicago Bears. That was the finalist. He was always going to be in the running for one of those. But when you look at the Nathaniel Hackett hire and the George Payton connections, when you're tying it back to what we saw with Dan Quinn and how Dan Quinn was very adamant about going to Denver, and now he's staying with the likes of the Dallas Cowboys for another season. What was it about Nathaniel Hackett that you think ultimately sold George Payton on making him the right name to bring in for 2022?
Right, yeah. I was actually watching some of his coaching videos, things that he does with clinics, and just he's a little different. He's got a passion in the way he sees the game that I think really sets him apart, and hopefully he can bring Aaron Rodgers with him. But notwithstanding Rodgers, and we'll have lots of time for speculation about that, I think Hackett is very smart. He's a very good communicator, and he just impressed George Payton. I was told that during the search committee, this was the best interview. This is the guy that just really set himself apart and had a different vision. And really important, they wanted an offense coach. They're coming from Vic Fangio, so going back-to-back with Dan Quinn, a defensive specialist, just didn't make sense to them. And a little bit younger coach with Hackett. And yeah, I think Hackett's a much better coaching candidate than really people understand. I think he's for real, and I think it's a good hire. They did the right thing. Of the group that they talk with, that was the guy.
One of the biggest things that I like about Nathaniel Hackett is that he has coaching experience at the collegiate level, was the offensive coordinator with Syracuse under Doug Marrone before he went to the Buffalo Bills. That's going to be very influential if they use the number 9 pick on a quarterback. Let's go ahead and talk about a team that both Hackett and Eberflus were interested in, but ultimately they went other ways. The Jacksonville Jaguars. Reports early on stated that Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and former Jags head coach, former Jags quarterback, was going to be the guy hired, and then talk stalled. I mean, when you're looking at this right now, and I totally understand the Trent Baalke thing is a big deal, multiple people have weighed in on it. How important is it for ownership and the Khan family to listen to potentially bringing in another name, potentially moving off of Baalke if they want to get the coaching hire right? And also, what direction do you go in if you don't land Byron Leftwich at this point, sticking your guns with Baalke for another season?
Right, yeah, I think if you're the Khan family, you have to be very open-minded to listening to the industry. It's not like you've been successful. So you've got the offensive coordinator for this, you know, they were the defending Super Bowl champion Buccaneers until, you know, they were expelled from this year's playoffs. But this is someone that's had success. He was one of your own. He's someone that, you know, played there, was a first-round draft pick, 7th overall. And I think a smart guy that, you know, Tom Brady has really raved about. And Tom won't just praise anybody. To me, you know, yes, I heard that he wanted to report directly to Khan. He didn't want Matt Eberflus. They submitted a list of general managers that they would be interested in, including Adrian Wilson from the Arizona Cardinals. And I think if you're the Cons, obviously that's a little off-putting because you've got the agent and the prospective coaching candidate making a lot of demands. So it went from, as I reported, it was going really well. And then the next morning when a lot of these asks were made and they realized that, you know, this negotiation is breaking down, and they very quickly tried to pivot to Hackett. They interviewed Vic Fangio, which I don't think concerns Byron Leftwich. But just if the relationship's, you know, going to be sour from the start, then you got to wonder, are they ultimately going to be able to work together, or can these things get ironed out? I think, you know, obviously if it worked out and they were able to hire him, I think, you know, fences will be mended pretty quickly. You just have to wonder, oh, is Leftwich, does he have a legitimate chance with the Saints, who are also talking to Brian Flores, Aaron Glenn, and, of course, the you know, in-house candidate, Dennis Allen, who I think is going to get the job. But, yeah, if they have to move to Plan B, you know, what is that going to be? Jim Caldwell interviewed very well. I heard Doug Peterson interview was just okay. And he has the experience. They'd like to have some experience. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the Jaguars. And Byron Leftwich, this is the job he wanted. But, you know, because he did stick up for himself and what he believed in, he could lose his job.
Aaron Wilson, national football writer for Pro Football Network. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Aaron Wilson NFL. Aaron, really interesting news coming out of Las Vegas. I know that we have talked about this off the air, and I talked to a few other people off the air, of course, about this. But when a coach says, I'm not interested in becoming a head coach, and then goes and interviews with the team, to me it feels like this was the one job. This was the one thing that I wanted all along, and if I'm going to get it, you want to know what? I'm going to run with it. And that's what it feels like with Josh McDaniels. Now not taking any interviews for any other teams, but the Las Vegas Raiders, he has a scheduled interview on Saturday. All goes well. It does feel like he is the front runner. He is the emerging candidate to take over. When you look at McDaniels, is this always what the game plan was for him? Either wait for Bill to retire or get a job in a prominent program such as Las Vegas?
Yes. I think with Josh, he's looking for the exact, you know, right situation. I know that this has been back channel with them for a little while now. They have been in these discussions, and it's, you know, been something where he hasn't been all in. Once they realized that he was serious and passionate about pursuing the job, they put the request in knowing that he would interview. He will interview today in Las Vegas with the, you know, Raiders, you know, group of Dan Fintrell, the team president, with Mark Davis, the owner. I don't know if Marcel Reese, the special advisor, will be in on this or not, but yeah, they could have synergy with him, with Dave Ziegler, or an Elliott Wolf. I think Ziegler is the, you know, guy that I think could become the general manager in all likelihood. And Josh, when he was head coach of the Broncos, I was talking with people of the Broncos, he was like 32 or 33 years old. They put way too much on him. They had him doing personnel. It just was not the right time to put that much on him. He's matured. He's learned a lot. He's the highest paid assistant coach in the game, $4 million a year. So it's going to be very expensive to get him to leave New England. And the other thing about it is what he doesn't have really contractually is head coach in waiting, even though it's been talked about. It's always been told that it was impossible. Well, it actually is possible. So, you know, New England could have an opportunity to counter and try to keep him depending on the clock and when Bill Belichick might decide that he's going to step away. But I think, you know, my understanding is that, you know, a lot of sources told me he won't step away completely. He would just go to a personnel boss role, kind of the way Bill Parcells has done in the past. So we'll see. I think that for Josh to really kind of build his legacy and to, you know, really correct what happened in the past, he's got to embrace this and go for it. Strike out on his own, be his own man, away from the Patriots. And, you know, I think a lot of it is, you know, what does he think of Derek Carr? What does he think of the Raiders' plan? Because the Raiders are not a surefire, like, oh, you're going to be back in the playoffs. They've got some things to fix with their roster and their cap, but I think it's a great opportunity. No job's ever perfect. It's open, right? So, yeah, I think for Josh, this is the right job at the right time.
Listen, I absolutely do think that after the Indianapolis thing, he was never going to get an opportunity again outside of New England. He has that opportunity to fix it. I would not be shocked to see him get hired. A team that does shock me a little bit are the New York Giants. They kind of do hold a little bit of the cards on two coaching futures and potentially three total teams. Brian Flores, Brian Daboll, both interviewed with the likes of Joe Shane, the new general manager. Daboll is a favorite to go get the job out in Miami, which was Flores' old job, who also has ties with the Houston Texans, and now is expected to interview with the New Orleans Saints. When you look at all three jobs overall, which is the one that you think makes the most sense for Daboll, and which is the one that you think makes the most sense for Flores?
If I'm Daboll, I would actually take the New York Giants job. I think that you've got to accept that the ceiling is only so high for Tua Tagovailoa. He should know that. Well, I think he might feel like he can get more out of Tua than others have. Just have to wonder, are you just going there and you're going to be third place in the AFC East behind the Patriots and behind the Buffalo Bills? So knowing how difficult that is, might you be better off coaching the Giants. I've also heard the Giants pay more than Stephen Ross. That's another factor. Money talks, obviously. And you know, I think about the Dolphins. If they don't get him, where do they go? You know, Vance Joseph would be very underwhelming. I think Mike McDaniel would be exciting. You know, I think you have to wonder, is he a lieutenant or is he a general? I'm just not sure. Is he the leader of the entire team? And, you know, they may have to widen their search if they don't get Dable. I think they should talk to Leslie Frazier, but we'll see. They haven't, you know, really seemed that fired up about him. And Leslie Frazier interviews this morning with the New York Giants, and he'll have a shot as well. Brian Flores is a finalist. I was told that he did fairly well in his interview with the Giants, and they asked him some tough questions about what happened, some of the conflicts he had with players, staff, general manager Chris Greer, the owner Stephen Ross. And so he answered those questions very well. They came away, you know, definitely thinking about him as a strong possibility, but Dable still is the front runner.
Listen, Aaron, we got about a minute left before I got to let you go. Aaron Wilson, follow him on Twitter, at Aaron Wilson NFL. The Houston Texans could be making absolute history this upcoming week if they hire Josh McCown. Guy has coaching experience in one spot as a high school offensive analyst, as a family friend, kind of like volunteer work. And you also have Kevin O'Connell, the offensive coordinator for the likes of the Los Angeles Rams, Jonathan Gannon, the defense coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles. But you wrote an absolute bomb column this morning talking about all these people who believe in the likes of Josh McCown. When you did your interviews and you were talking around the league, what is it, or what was the consensus from players and personnel members that makes Josh McCown an actual viable name to be a head coach without any coaching
experience?
We talk
a lot about authenticity and the way he can connect with people. This is someone that just, you know, in some examples, you know, you'd be like, well, he couldn't help those guys. But he had a friendship and a respect with a Johnny Manziel or a Jamarcus Russell or an Emmitt Smith. This is someone that is just, I think he inspires people. He has a likability factor. And I think he gets respect from people. He also sees the game. You know, that was a great point that I thought Steve Smith made in the interview. You know, Frank Reich, Jason Garrett, you know, guys like that, Doug Peterson, they were backup quarterbacks. They do see the game a different way. And I talked to a Jets assistant coach. He didn't want to be quoted, but he was there with Sam Darnold when he was mentoring Sam Darnold. And he said, this guy, he'd figure it out. He's smart. I'm not saying they're going to hire him, but it's certainly an interesting possibility, and it's one that they take seriously, as do they with Jonathan Gannon, who would also be a first-timer. So it would make history. If he had done it last year, going from playing right to being a head coach, only happened one other time, Norm Van Brocklin back in 1961 with the Philadelphia Eagles. So we're talking history here if it happens.
You're talking immense history. Aaron Wilson, Pro Football Network senior writer. Go give him a follow on Twitter, at Aaron Wilson NFL. Aaron, great talking to you, brother.
Great talking to you. See ya.
We'll close out hour two of the Wake Up Call right here on Sports Map Radio Network after this.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Cole Thompson filling in for Tony D right here on Wake Up Call. And Ronald, I do not get into politics. I absolutely hate politics, but I cannot help but love hearing about all of these people getting upset with the Joe Rogan news. Not only has Neil Young been pulled from Spotify, but Barry Manilow has joined in on the party, wanting off Spotify as long as they continue to play Joe Rogan. I have a joke for, you know, Neil Young. Southern man, don't need him around anyhow. Now that one, you got one for Barry Manilow? You got a joke for Barry Manilow or no?
No.
I don't either. Okay.
The only song I know he sang was Mandy. And that was
for
Amanda.
Oh, Barry, you can get out and leave this station. Like that's all I got. I mean, like I literally don't have much without that. Who is the one artist, though, for you, if they took off of Spotify, that you'd be like, all right, time to take Joe Rogan off?
I'm the worst person to ask that.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't have Spotify.
Oh, that's pretty fair. Okay, yeah. I guess it's fair. I will.
So Any artist.
Any who? Okay, who is your favorite artist that they said you can't have me on iTunes anymore?
Yeah,
Joe Rogan's on
that, that's probably better. Maybe Foo Fighters.
I like that one. I actually do.
I'm a huge Foo Fighters fan, and if all of a sudden I couldn't get my Foo in the morning,
if Dave Grohl says, you know what, I'm rolling out.
I'm rolling with Dave.
You're rolling with Dave. Yeah. You're gonna. Yep. Okay. That's pretty fair.
I'm rolling with Grohl. I'll roll with Grohl. Is that the campaign slogan?
That's going to be it. Grohl with Grohl. Or Grohling with Grohl or something like that. Yeah. I would do Elton John. Elton John got taken off, I do not think I'd be able to listen anymore. Because I love Elton John. I don't know why. As a little kid, I got really into him when he went bonfire on the Lion King soundtrack. That was my ish growing up. I was born in 93. Lion King came out in 94. He's synonymous with my childhood. If Joe Rogan said, oh, Elton John, you can get out of here too, I'd go, you know what? I totally understand if you want to give out fake medical medical advice. I'm totally cool with that. But do not touch my guy. He's still standing because he is Rocket Man and he is soaring to the moon. Joe Rogan, you can get out of here. Elton John forever. That would be the guy who I would 100% stand behind if he said, no more Spotify. Yep, got it.